we take a look at a bird near and dear to the hearts of many Wisconsinites. For over a decade, experts have been working to reintroduce whooping cranes to Wisconsin and beyond.
But it hasn't been an easy road for the cranes, and the species is struggling with low population numbers and difficulties with cranes not being able to raise chicks to the fledgling state. And it's got experts wondering if it's time for a shift in strategy.
Joining us now to talk about the challenges to whooping crane restoration is Dr. Barry Hartup. He's Director of Veterinary Services at the International Crane Foundation and co-chair of the Whooping Crane Eastern Partnership. Dr. Hartup, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you very much, Rob. Glad to be here.
Well, let's first get into what we're recovering from. What was the population of whooping cranes like back in the old days in the eastern United States before they disappeared?
Well, the whooping crane is a species that requires very large territories for successful breeding, and we believe it was not very numerous as a species, but we would figure that, guesstimate that there were a few thousand birds probably on the pre-settlement landscape in the 1800s.
And what happened to them?
Agricultural development, loss of habitat throughout the Great Plains and the prairie provinces of Canada. Draining of those wetlands robbed the cranes of their nesting habitat, and they got to a low of 15 or 16 birds in the early 1940s, and they've recovered from that point to about 300 today.
That's where we are now. Now, a lot of us haven't had the opportunity to see a whooping crane, maybe on a computer screen at best. Can you describe what one looks like?
Whooping cranes are about 5 feet tall. They weigh about 10 to 12 pounds. They have a long wingspan of about 6 feet and have they're snow white. Their plumage is snow white. They have a brilliant red cap on the top of their head, and they're black. Their wingtips are black in color.
And talk about what we've been trying so far to reintroduce whooping cranes to Wisconsin and the eastern United States.
Well, for many decades, the United States and Canada have been attempting to add to the whooping crane population through a number of creative means. Basically, programs that started in the 1970s and 1980s tried to supplement this population that has rebounded, this wild population that has rebounded slowly, with different strategies, first in the Rocky Mountains, then also in central Florida, and now here in Wisconsin and the eastern United States since 2001.
What's happening here in Wisconsin in particular?
Well, we have tried essentially from scratch to create a migratory population of whooping cranes that would call Wisconsin home, breed here in the south central Wisconsin, in and around the Nisida National Wildlife Refuge, and then migrate to the southeastern United States all the way from essentially Tennessee south to Florida.
And starting from scratch includes teaching the birds how to migrate, right? Training them on the right flight path. How has that happened?
Exactly. That was began again in 2001, where these individual cranes. Now we're talking about using cranes that were bred and reared in captivity and kept from imprinting on people by their caretakers wearing costumes to make them look like a mother crane. But then also getting those birds acclimated to following an ultralight aircraft. And we found that through very just classic behavioral training techniques, we could get these cranes to follow that ultralight aircraft from point A, Wisconsin, to point B, which is a refuge named Chazawitzka National Wildlife Refuge in northwestern Florida.
And reading your annual report, I see efforts to bring them back are plugging along slowly. There are a lot of challenges, and I want to get into some of those. One of them, kind of surprised me, black flies are a problem in the effort to restore whooping cranes. Why is that?
Well, it caught a lot of us by surprise, frankly. We had done quite thorough habitat evaluations here in Wisconsin to find what we believed would be the greatest amount of habitat and very appropriate breeding habitat for whooping cranes prior to this project starting. But we don't know a lot about whooping cranes as well, and one of those issues that came to light in about 8 years ago was the fact that there are very abundant populations of two species of blackfly in the Niceta region that happen to be attracted to whooping cranes. And they pester the cranes when they are incubating on their nests in spring, to the point where the cranes basically, to save themselves, need to get off the nest, and thus their incubation failures, and they don't hatch out chicks.
Wow. And then another natural hazard, I guess, or maybe not natural, I saw predators are a big part of the difficulties facing the effort to restore whooping cranes. What kind of predators are we talking about?
Well, it depends if we could be talking about somewhat larger predators, if there was a loss of an adult bird, something like a coyote, even aerial predators such as an eagle. Smaller carnivores such as mink or raccoons could take a, or ravens even could take a small chicks because they're only a few hundred grams in the first couple of weeks of life.
And then human shootings, too. You've encountered that.
Yes, that's very unfortunate. Since 2001, we have documented nearly, I believe, about 10 instances of illegal shootings of cranes in this reintroduced population, ranging in location from the southeastern states in the Ohio River Valley and such to Indiana, as well as here in Wisconsin. We believe it's the about the third leading cause of death of those cranes that we actually know how they passed away.
And I saw one person had given the excuse that he thought it was an albino sandhill crane. Why doesn't your report said basically that doesn't make sense? That's a myth. What's wrong with that?
Well, for one, we don't have a hunting season for sandhill cranes, whether they're whiter or lighter in color or darker gray here in Wisconsin. And so there is no legal hunt in this state, and this individual shouldn't have been shooting at a sandhill crane if he even knew it was a sandhill crane.
So for the for the whooping cranes themselves, it sounds like one of the biggest challenges is in the chick raising process. They get them hatched, but they don't always make it to the fledgling stage. Why not?
Well, again, from the work that led us to believe that black flies are a major impediment or have been a problem in the Niceta area, we have learned through the experimental suppression of those black fly populations that even in those years where we can where we've controlled the black flies, that our chick rearing success is not as as high as we would like, and that it's very unfortunate because this all happens in such an isolated environment. It's very difficult for us to determine why that didn't happen. We believe that that habitat should be adequate, that the food supply should be adequate, but we can't quite verify predation as the leading cause, but we presume that that is the greatest difficulty. Our hope is that by facilitating a move of this population and now doing our releases more in the east central part of Wisconsin towards the Horicon National Wildlife Refuge area, including White River Marsh State Wildlife Area, that our released cranes will have a much better success rate at getting through incubation and avoiding black flies and hopefully avoid any post-hatching problems as well for the chicks.
We're talking with Barry Hardup. He's with the International Crane Foundation and the Whooping Crane Eastern Partnership, talking about the challenges facing the restoration efforts for the bird in this half of the country, this half of the continent, I should say. You can join the conversation at 800-642-1234.
What questions do you have about whooping crane restoration in Wisconsin and beyond? And what do you think could be done to try and help these birds in the wild? Let us know. 800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page. We're talking with Dr. Barry Hartup about the International Crane Foundation and Whooping Crane Eastern Partnership's efforts to restore the populations of whooping cranes. And we invite you to join the conversation as well at 800-642-1234.
Do you have a question about what it takes to get whooping cranes back into the wild and migrating successfully? Have you seen a whooping crane around the state or elsewhere for that matter? Where would you like to see efforts focus next? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. We'll go to our callers now. We've got Ryan on the line in Mercer. Ryan, hi, you're on the air.
Hi. In April of this year, I saw what I believe were whooping cranes in the area of Powell Marsh and around the Rhinelander flowage on Highway 47. I was wondering if your guest has heard any reports of cranes being in that area.
Ryan, thanks. Dr. Hartup, is that someplace one would expect to see whooping cranes?
That seems a bit far north for us, but it is certainly possible. Some of the birds that have been released in eastern Wisconsin have ventured fairly far, actually quite close to Green Bay. In their wanderings, and we do know that these birds, as youngsters, sub-adults, go on long wandering migrations. And as a matter of fact, we've had birds go as far west as Minnesota and maybe even eastern South Dakota in some instances. So it's possible, but we have not certainly had regular reports from that area.
Ryan, thanks for the call. We'll go to John in Whitewater now. John, hi, you're on the air.
Hello. I've noticed in southern Wisconsin what seems to be a real increase in sandhill cranes over the last 10 years. And I wonder if you verify that or know something about sandhill crane populations. But the question I have about whooping cranes is there, what's the difference between raising young for whooping cranes that makes it more difficult, apparently, than sandhill cranes to young?
Oh, interesting. Thanks for that call, John. Good question. Dr. Hartup?
Well, these birds were raised themselves in captivity and were not raised in the wild by their own kind. There are a number of cues that we can mimic while we wear costumes and try to orient the birds and acclimate the birds into the wild environment. But we will not always be able to do that perfectly. When the birds themselves go about reproducing, even the birds here in captivity, we know that they take several tries before they seem to get it right. That seems to happen with this very long-lived species, and we would expect them to get better at it with practice.
Thanks a lot for the call. John, we've got Kathy on the line in Green Bay now. Kathy, hi.
Hi. I'm calling to ask Dr. Hartup if he would talk about some of the successes that have happened with this population that calls Wisconsin home, because my understanding is that that this experiment has so many moving parts and that in many ways it has been gratifying.
Yeah, some Kathy, of the wins, Dr. Hartup. Thanks, Kathy.
Yes. Kathy, bless you. Yes, this is has been a very interesting project to be a part of. You realize it's almost a generational kind of activity, not something that is going to be fixed within a couple of years. The complexity in this project is immense. We're trying to restore a species to the landscape that has been absent for 125 years. We have created a number of firsts in this project. One, the birds that we have reintroduced that survive that first year after release live at the rate that the wild flock between Canada and Texas live at. They're surviving well. They're pairing with one another at a time when they should. They're breeding very early. For this long-lived species here at ICF, we sometimes our birds don't breed until they're 7 years old. The ones that are out in this reintroduced population are breeding as young as 3 years of age. So there's some incredible firsts. We've had several hatchings. We had a record number of hatchings this year. We had 13 chicks hatch from 8 nests. But it's that success of getting those first generation out on the landscape that's being reared by cranes. We need them to survive, and that's where the current challenge lies.
And you mentioned one solution to the black fly problem, moving to a different part of the state to try to get away from them. What are some of the other new things, the cutting edge parts of the whooping crane restoration effort?
Well, we worked at least to get birds on the landscape with the help of an ultralight aircraft starting in 2001. Beginning in 2005, we actually took the airplane out of the equation in that instance and directly released cranes raised here at ICF into the wild at Nisida, and then now we've done that also at Horicon National Wildlife Refuge. In the last couple of years, we've been also working with colleagues from Maryland at introducing birds that have been reared by captive crane pairs, taking those young from quote-unquote mom and dad at an appropriate age at when they should be able to fly and acclimating them briefly to a release site here in Wisconsin and thinking that those birds might have some behavioral advantage down the road that might improve their success in the future. So these are all real novel approaches that hadn't been tried previously.
You mentioned at the outset that habitat, loss of habitat along the migration path was a big problem. Have we brought back enough of that habitat to give them a valid flight path to survive in the wild?
Well, again, what's pretty unique is as you think about the eastern half of the United States, I mean, it's an incredibly developed landscape and very, very different than the mid to late 1800s. we knew this was going to be a challenge, but through protection both by federal and state governments and private lands, the realization was that there was probably enough habitat to support a sustaining population here in the eastern U.S. And what really bears that out is, again, once those birds reach adulthood within a year, those birds seem to be surviving at a rate we see in the wild population in the central U.S. And so that is about as good a marker as any to say there's habitat here for these birds to survive. Now they got to start reproducing on their own. We can't just keep putting them out on the landscape forever.
What would success look like? When would you step back and say, all right, we've got a viable population out there in the wild?
Well, probably the easiest, people always are looking for numbers. We had a numeric target previously, about 125 birds or so. We've been very close to meeting that, but what really we're looking for is the fact that these birds are able to reproduce and we're going to see several chicks fledging, flying on their own here in late fall in Wisconsin, ready to migrate with their parents, and that those birds survive to maturity. That's what success is going to look like, and essentially we need that reproduction to offset any losses in the population in any given year. That's, to me, what sustainability would look like.
And is there a point coming up where you stop and reevaluate and say, okay, maybe this isn't moving along fast enough, our efforts aren't paying off?
Sure. As a matter of fact, the Whooping Crane Eastern Partnership has been through an external review process just a few years ago, looking really critically at processes within our partnership. This is many organizations that are working to try to make this happen, not just the Crane Foundation. We're using reviews, again, internal reviews to double-check and triple-check that we're making the best strides forward as we possibly can. But
ultimately, this happens with the blessing of the International Whooping Crane Recovery Team, a group of experts from the U.S. and Canada. And they have said that they would like to conduct a review of this project in 5 years to evaluate the success that we're showing at that time. So one could say that the clock is ticking, but that it's essentially going to be a long, hard review.
We've got the state effort, a national, and as you say, an international effort. Why? Why is it so important to bring back whooping cranes to our half of the continent?
Well, this is an iconic species. It really is one right up there with the California condor, black-footed ferret, and others. It's a great example. They're a beautiful species, tall, wonderful species, a very good indicator of our landscape here in the upper Midwest, and it's a missing piece of the puzzle. And we believe that we need people who care and want to have and be able to pass down that natural heritage to future generations. And so we believe that this effort is really worth fighting for.
And when does the Wisconsin population head to the southeast?
They head to the southeast anywhere from late October into November. Most of the birds tend to be out of here by Thanksgiving or so.
All right, that'll be the next milestone to watch. Dr. Hardup, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me.
That's Dr. Barry Hardup. He's the Director of Veterinary Services at the International Crane Foundation, and he's co-chair of the Whooping Crane Eastern Partnership.